We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey guys, it's Jones, Carolina Insider on the way. We'll look back at the tough weekend for Carolina basketball. We will discuss Carolina football, getting the invitation to the Military Bowl. Plus, we have a cool interview with Chris Duzan, who is the producer of the All Access TV show from the ACC Network about Carolina basketball. All of that coming up. But before we get to that, I would like for you to fire up your tractor. And don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action this year. Let LS Tractor help make short work of them, from normal yard maintenance to those larger projects. LS Tractor has the perfect machine for you. Visit lstractor.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Let's get to it. Another terrific episode of the Carolina Insider coming up right now.
From brand new Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, I'm not in a good headspace, frame of mind right now. I'm on the grouchy side, Adam. It has been a kick in the pants kind of last few days for the Tar Heels. Like, I want to put my two hands out here, Adam. On My right hand is my good hand. My left hand's my bad hand, just like on the court. I'll put Military Bowl. That goes in the good hand.
Yeah.
Tar Heels Temple, Military Bowl. We'll talk about that.
Women's basketball, undefeated.
Women's basketball.
Courtney Banghart, awesome.
And our friend Courtney Banghart off to a tremendous start to the season. That's in the good hand.
Good hand.
Good hand.
Strong side, right side. That's backwards.
Now, Adam, I've got my bad hand over here. The Tar Heels have scored fewer than 50 points in back-to-back games for the first time since the 1948 season. They lost to Ohio State and Virginia, both in relatively one-sided affairs. The Virginia game much closer than the Ohio State game, but neither game particularly pleasant. We've already talked about Ohio State. Women's soccer, after an awesome year, has a terrific championship game against Stanford and comes up just short in penalty kicks, which penalty kicks just aren't a good... I mean, it's not like this is a new debate in the world of football. Penalty kicks, a tough way to decide a championship. And the Tar Heels even go to extra penalty kicks. That's how close this match was. And they fall to Stanford. All that goes in the bad hand. And out of my bad hands outweighing my good hand.
It was tough. I feel like women's soccer coming right on the heels of basketball was like the living embodiment of, would you rather lose big or would you rather just have your heart ripped out at the end? I don't like having my heart ripped out.
I don't like either one.
No.
But they both happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, Adam, it just tough stretch here for the Tar Heels for sure.
And we knew it was going to be, basketball-wise. We said it beforehand, but that didn't make it any easier to observe firsthand.
So we'll talk a little bit about this Virginia game. We will talk about the Military Bowl, a couple other things I'm sure that Adam has ready to go. And Adam, good guest today. We're going to talk to Chris Duzan. Did I say I psyched myself out on his last name?
That time you got it.
Okay. Chris is...
We can't all pronounce things as accurately as I do.
I understand. That's a hard standard to live up to. I'm going to call Chris. I don't know if this is the exact correct title. He's essentially the executive producer of the All Access show that you see for Carolina basketball on the ACC network. And really enjoyed talking to Chris about a little bit about his background, about his vision for this show, about his experience with working with the Tar Heels. And I think people are going to enjoy an inside look at the inside look of the Tar Heels.
I think there's two demographics for this. One, Tar Heel fans. I feel like we may reach some of those. And then two, I think if you're a younger person who's interested in that line of work, by which I mean sports and broadcast things, he's got a lot of really good advice that I think people will benefit from.
Absolutely. Let's get started, though, with Carolina, Virginia. And Adam, I think going into the game, we had a feel that it was likely going to be a low-scoring, grind-it-out kind of game. And it certainly was. It was 24-18 at halftime. I mean, it was something like 3-2 about 10 minutes into the game. And it just wasn't... Wasn't a real pretty performance by either team, quite honestly. And I thought the difference in the game came down to Virginia made 6 3-pointers. Carolina made 1 in 14 shots and free throws. Virginia made 18 of 25. Carolina was just 12 of 22. Because, Adam, I honestly think Carolina and Virginia are in pretty similar places as far as where their program is at this moment, where they're trying to work in a lot of new people and have some big challenges on the offensive side. And so it came down to which team was going to hit a few more shots and which team was going to convert those opportunities for easy points. And it was Virginia that did it and not the Tar Heels.
That was the living embodiment of why you don't want to play this game the first weekend in December, because you have two teams that are still trying to figure out who they are. Two teams who you think are going to matter in the ACC race. Neither one of them, well, both of them have injuries that they're dealing with to important players. And then you make them go play on December the 7th. That what you got on Sunday is what you get when that happens. Now, they're going to play again in mid-February, and I would expect that game to be substantially different than yesterday. Although, anytime Virginia plays, it's not going to be pretty.
Carolina's offense has been historically not good here over this past week. And I do think there are two angles to it. And we always see the Tar Heel angle, and I think like a lot of Tar Heel fans, and I'm guessing the Tar Heels are concerned at the moment about Carolina's offensive output. But I do think it was exacerbated extraordinarily by the fact that they were facing the two top defensive teams in the country in defensive efficiency. As Coach Williams says, the other team has a right to try and win the game too, and they've got good players too. And I do think it is is Carolina's offense very good right now? No. Is Carolina's offense this season going to be as good as it normally is? No. At least I don't think so. But I do think Ohio State and Virginia's defensive acumen made it worse than it really is at the moment. It was a bad combination for Carolina where the Tar Heels are in their development right now.
Yeah. We can't solve it.
No.
And obviously Roy Williams is going to try to solve it. I think it was interesting to see what things look like when the Tar Heels threw some different pieces out there. You saw the debuts of Jeremiah Francis and Anthony Harris. And when Jeremiah Francis came in, he played point guard and Cole Anthony played off the ball. Well, last two games, Cole Anthony's had 3 assists and 9 turnovers. So that might be something to consider. I don't think that's the full-time answer because Cole Anthony remains Carolina's best player. And Armando Bacot is 1A. And just if you really want to scare yourself, imagine if Armando Bacot hadn't played on Sunday because he was 5 of 8 from the field, 11 points. You take him away and the rest of the Tar Heels were 12 for 38. And I think that goes back to some of the offensive issues that you're talking about. Bacot and Brooks together were 7 for 13. That's pretty good, especially against a Virginia team that I think is still number 2 in the country on two-point defense. They've been very good inside the arc, but Bacot and Brooks were 7 for 13. That's good. But everybody else, that means, was not very good. And there's your offensive issues. Carolina's got to figure out a way to regularly get the ball inside. That's option 1 until proven otherwise because teams have decided they want to take Anthony away. Option 1's getting the ball inside, and that's how Roy Williams has coached for 40 years. They've got to do a better job of that in order to be as good as they can be. Now, if Carolina wants to consistently do that, teams are going to foul Bacot if he keeps shooting 1 for 6 from the free throw line. So there's a solution and a problem with the solution.
I thought the best things to come out of this game were, 1, Armando Bacot, who there was no – Carolina was not trying to be tricky. They were not trying to hide the fact that Armando Bacot was going to suddenly burst onto the scene and be ready for this game. I think the genuine – belief was that Armando Bacot was not going to play in this game against Virginia and likely could be out for several games. Certainly that was the case on Wednesday night after the Ohio State game. He rebounded physically very, very quickly to the point that he was able to play essentially a full game without pain and without side effect. And I don't think the Tar Heels saw that coming, but they're glad that he was able to rebound physically. So, to me, that is the number one best thing coming out of this game is that Bacot was not hurt for any serious amount of time. I think he showed a little bit of toughness by being able to rebound that way and get out there and was effective for the most part. 11 points, couple rebounds, couple blocks. Not his best performance of the season, but certainly was one of Carolina's best options in this game. Secondly, to see Anthony Harris and Jeremiah Francis on the court, I think is exciting for Carolina. Did they make huge impacts in this particular game? Not necessarily. But to have, there's two storylines there. One is the Carolina side. To have those guys available gives you more options, gives you more flexibility, allows you to use the bench some as a motivator on the wing. I think it gives you a lot more flexibility as Roy Williams and his staff at those positions. And it gives you two guys who are talented players. They've both been set back by injuries, but both guys who at one point were very highly recruited. And then for them, it's just great for them to be back on the court, especially Jeremiah Francis. And that's not to say it isn't for Anthony Harris, but Jeremiah Francis hasn't played competitive basketball in more than 2 years. And all of a sudden, he's out there in the middle of an ACC game against a team that won the national championship a season ago. So he was thrown into the fire a bit. But just to see them out there, you feel good for them. And I do think in the long run, it is a positive for Carolina because they're talented guys that give you some more options.
I don't want people to misunderstand that Harris and Francis were somehow happy Carolina lost, or that
right.
they're not competitors, or they're soft or whatever. So that's not the case when I say what I'm about to say. It was so nice to see how happy, not about the game, but about their lives.
Yeah.
That they were after the game. And Anthony Harris's family was there, and Jeremiah Francis talked to his dad, who himself played, so he understands, FaceTimed with him, as the kids do, after the game. And they were both just so happy. They've been getting up every morning before 7 o'clock to go work out with Jonas at 7:30 every single day. Who listening when they were in college would have gotten up before 7 o'clock every day to do anything, much less go have Jonas Serration push you to your absolute physical capacity every single morning, and then you go to class, and then you go to practice. That's hard work to do. So, to me, that's a great story. And I understand, Adam and Jones trying to tell us everything's great when it's not. The game wasn't good. The Tar Heels didn't play well.
No.
But Harris and Francis are a great story. Now, as far as what they bring to the team, I think we got a chance to ask them after the game, now that you're an option, what do you bring? And the best case scenario would have been if one of them said, well, I'm a dead-eye shooter, and I knock down threes and make it rain. Neither one of them said that. So they're not curing one of the number one problems the Tar Heels currently have. But Harris said, I can be a lockdown defender. I feel like I can guard most anybody on the perimeter. That's good. And I can score when I have to. Okay. He made a couple baskets against Virginia. Making a couple baskets against Virginia, as we saw, is a little bit of a challenge. So that's good. And Jeremiah Francis said, I can run the team. I feel like I can play the point guard position. Okay, that's good. That's an area that Carolina needs. Gives you some flexibility with your guards. If nothing else, Cole Anthony can have 2 or 3 minutes shaved off the minutes he's having to play, which makes him better late in games. Maybe he's a little stronger, a little more able to finish at the rim, and just physically stronger. That would be great. So they're going to add something. Is it the number one thing Carolina needs? It might not be, but it gives you a little more flexibility.
Harris looks like like he can play. And I know that means nothing, but he just looked. He's got the body. You can tell he's got the athleticism. He's got to start trusting the knee, which is understandable. But he just looks like, especially as he matures, he's going to be a physical force out there for the position that he plays. And I think this is about the time period that Carolina thought he was going to be back. They were being conservative with him, making sure that he was fully healthy instead of trying to rush him out there. But I think this is about when he expected to be back. I think the bigger wild card of the two is Jeremiah Francis. Because, Adam, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I'm not sure that Carolina thought Jeremiah Francis was going to be available and ready to give them minutes at this moment, even as recently as a couple months ago. I don't think they were confident in that. And so I think he's the one that is more unknown to me as far as can he really physically right now be out there for long stretches of time. And if he can, all of a sudden – how does that change how you approach things, your rotation? And physically, is he, what percentage is he of what he is used to playing at? Like, what is his new normal as far as his physical ability? Because he has had some very serious injuries over the last couple of years. So is he, can he be 100% of what he used to be? Can he be 90% of what he used to be? And I don't, I'm throwing out numbers. I don't know that answer. But I think that is something that will be interesting to find out as these next few weeks move on and he figures out what he can do and how he can be a part.
And he doesn't know.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't think anybody knows right now.
He had a torn ACL and he had microfracture surgery. I'm not a doctor, but I know those words. And microfracture surgery is something you're not 100% sure you'll be able to play basketball again. So how much of Jeremiah Francis is he now? I think we're going to find out over the next few months. But remember, pre-injury Jeremiah Francis was a big deal when he committed to Carolina. We don't know what of that he is, but just you look at his ranking coming into Carolina, because I know people like to do that. It was down because he hadn't played. He just hadn't played basketball. But pre-injury ranking Jeremiah Francis was an important player, someone Carolina needed.
Yeah, top 50 type of player on the national level.
Yeah, which means you're going to play. So, but I think you're right about Harrison. I think just when he was out there, you saw him doing what you talked about. He's chasing down the ball wherever it goes, trying to, that's the way he plays. He is a tough player, which Carolina needs, because there were a couple times yesterday, the Tar Heels just watched the ball bounce across the court. And that's what you're talking about with the bench as a motivator. When that happens, Roy Williams needs to be able to say, you do that again, you're sitting over here beside me, because here comes Anthony Harris. He wants to chew the basketball up every time he sees it.
I want to mention two more things about the game, but before we do that, I, Adam, am going to deem this a triple champion of the court from Sunday. Armando Bacot, Anthony Harris, Jeremiah Francis, all showing some toughness in the face of physical adversity. They are our champions of the court, where we highlight MVPs from the previous game. Brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds to help keep you in the game and at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. Adam, two more things that I think are concerning for Carolina, other than the ball just not going in very much right now. 6 assists and 12 turnovers. And second straight game in which Carolina's been out-rebounded. Those two things, I think no matter, of course, the assists, the ball going in the basket helps the assists, of course. But those two things can be better whether or not you're shooting a great percentage or not. That's something that I would think Roy Williams is going to focus on.
And Coach Williams talked a lot about the assists after the game in what was kind of an unusual press conference for him, because he just, it wasn't mad Roy Williams, but it was frustrated Roy Williams. And Carolina had just one assist in the first half, which he called out by number. For the season, the Tar Heels have assists on 52% of their field goals. That's not a great number for the way Carolina plays. Just for example, last year, Carolina had assists on 61% of their field goals, which was 14th in the country. Where the Tar Heels are right now is below 100 in the country. So that's some context for the difference. You're right. When the ball goes in, you get more assists. But I think it also lends itself to some of the offense has been one-on-one based, where teammates just aren't working together in order to create open shots. And when that wasn't happening in October and November, we thought, well, as they get to know each other, that'll become better. To this point, it hasn't. I still think there's a tendency to stand around and go, okay, Cole Anthony, save us. And it just doesn't work that way in ACC basketball. It will sometimes, but that can't be your number one approach. And I thought the shot clock violation that Carolina had in the first half yesterday was demonstrative of the fact that Carolina just isn't communicating well and isn't aware of what's happening sometimes. Part of it was not seeing the time on the clock, but part of it was that with 9 seconds on the clock, Garrison Brooks had the ball 25 feet from the basket. Well, there's no part of Carolina's offense that says, all right, guys, when the clock gets to nine, let's get Garrison out there near the three-point line. We'll throw him the ball. That's not the plan, even against Virginia, a great defensive team. So there are pieces that just aren't fitting together at the moment. But there are pieces.
Only one time, at least that I can find here on record, Adam, that Carolina had fewer assists under Coach Williams. They had five in a game at Maryland in February of 2009. So with only six in this past game compared to 12 turnovers in the game, certainly something Carolina would like to fix.
Well, and as long as we're on a roll with how great all these things are going, I think Carolina's defense is also, it looked okay against Virginia because Virginia can't shoot. But the Cavaliers have been turning it over a ton. They were turning it over on about 20% of their possessions, which is high for a Tony Bennett team. And the Tar Heels got some in the first half, but then there was about a 15-minute stretch on the clock that Carolina didn't get any in the second half. And that's not coincidentally when Virginia stretched out the lead. So not only are you not able to force turnovers, you're not forcing them against a team that had been committing a lot. And I think that's a concern because that's a way to connect to the offensive issues if you can create some easy baskets defensively. And right now Carolina's having a hard time doing that too.
So the Tar Heels, no game this week, exam week for them. They will have very limited basketball activities here early in the week. And then they match up with Wofford in the Smith Center, in Carmichael on Sunday. By the way, that game brought to you by Hickory Tavern and Coca-Cola. Don't know if you know that, Adam. And we'll have some fun things that we're going to do later in the week for that game, which we'll tell you about later in this pod. But Adam, anything else about this game or the Tar Heels before we get to our interview with Chris Duzan and then truck through the rest of our stuff?
That's it.
Okay. So Tar Heels 6-3 right now, 1-1 in the ACC. Wofford, Gonzaga, UCLA, the next three. Before we get to our interview, let me remind you that whether your favorite seat is courtside or with a bird's eye view, head to StubHub Geb them right now. Grab 100% verified tickets so you know you'll get in. They've been hooking fans up with amazing seats for nearly 20 years. StubHub, official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. StubHub, be there. I enjoyed this interview with Chris Duzan. Chris was like sandbagging us before this. He was like, oh, guys, I'm not really good on these type of interviews. I'm not sure you're really even going to ever want to use this.
I believe his words were that he was historically bad on the radio and or podcasts.
So with all that buildup, no, this was actually, I think you're really going to enjoy this. Learn a little bit about this, the All Access show, kind of how it came about, how it's being approached, and some about Chris and his background, his interaction with Carolina basketball. And as you'll learn, he's done some amazing stuff early in his career, in his professional life as a television producer. So I think you're going to enjoy this. Let's get to that conversation. We'll come back. We have a lot more to do here on, including talking about the Military Bowl here on the Carolina Insider.
You may not realize it, but you invite our next guest into your den and living room about once a month. You don't know he's there, but you've been enjoying his work. Chris Duzan, feature producer, and most importantly, for our listeners' purposes, the mastermind, I think it's fair to say, that's what it says on your business card, behind the Carolina Basketball All Access show that people have really been enjoying these last couple months, and they've got several more months to watch. So, Chris, thanks for coming by and talking to us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
How did this project get started? Why Carolina Basketball?
So I wasn't there with the initial conversations, but I understand our VP of programming, Stacey McCollum, came and met with the athletic department. We at the ACC Network want to make the hallmarks of the network storytelling and access. And we had already paired with Virginia to do the Unbelievable documentary. And we wanted to find another high-level basketball program. So we start looking around, and what better place in Carolina, specifically this year with Coach Williams getting closer and closer to the 879 mark, it just made sense for us to give it a shot.
So, Chris, do you, and I know these are one and the same, are you ESPN? Are you ACC Network? Have you done stuff with ESPN in the past and now just with the ACC? How is all that work?
I am. So I work directly out of ESPN's main headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut. I worked for ESPN directly for the last 3 years, primarily doing College Game Day and Monday NFL Countdown, as well as SportsCenter and some other projects here and there. But now I do work specifically for ACC Network, so I'm ACC all of the time and couldn't be more stoked about it.
How'd you get into it? I mean, I think a lot of people would go, wow, what an awesome job. That's what I want to do. How'd you get into it?
So I have a weird story with how I got into it. So it is a dream job to start with. It is an absolute blessing. I grew up a sports fan, but I'm 5'10" and unathletic.
And Adam, you are 5'6" and unathletic, so we're good there.
I was going to say, I'm not tall like Chris.
I feel short around these guys. But so my dental hygienist's husband hired the interns at Raycom Sports about 10 years ago. So I went in to get my teeth cleaned. She said, what are you in college for? I said, sports management. She said, what do you want to do? I said, I have no idea. So she said, well, you should talk to my husband. He works at Raycom. So I called him. I had never done anything with broadcasting, camera work, editing. He said, you can come in and organize our ACC video library, which at Raycom is a massive project.
Yeah.
I did zero of that. I went in there. They hired me on. I have no idea why. And I began working the night shift with them, editing 10-second coming up next bumps for ACC Basketball Today with Mike Hogwood. So that was my start. I worked for free for almost 2 years. Not sure how legal that is. I was logging tapes at Raycom, getting paid $10 every other hour at one point.
Every other hour. I like how they wouldn't tell you it was $5 an hour. We're paying you $10 an hour, Chris. It's every other hour.
And you know what the crazy thing is? Me at 20 years old, I was like, you're going to pay me to watch basketball? I'll do this all day. So
you're their target demographic for that job, Chris.
Exactly. They got their money's worth. So I just kind of started learning more from those guys, from Jeremy Williams, who was the one that hired me on. He's an E60 producer now. Alex Farmartino, who actually produced the UNC-UVA game last night and be producing the Wofford game this weekend. Dave Berenger and Rob Reichle, they kind of taught me everything in the business. They gave me a chance to operate a camera, to edit, to get in the truck and help with the live shows. And I just kind of soaked it all in. And after 2 years, they couldn't get rid of me. So they found a job for me and then kind of been off to the races from there.
I want to talk about some of the other things you've done, but you mentioned that the ACC Network wants to be heavy on storytelling. So especially like with this project, how do you tell a story when you don't control the story?
That is a tough one. I try to stay flexible. So I go into each episode without too much of an idea of what I'm going to do. After about a week, I start to see, oh, these are what the guys are doing. Here's what the storylines are with the team. And then I'll build a flexible outline for the show. And just depending on what they're doing each day, that might change. I might drop some things out of that outline. I might add a few. You know, the KJ Smith scholarship moment was a perfect example because we had no idea that was going to happen. That happens and you go, okay, well, now the outline of the whole show changes for that segment. So you just stay flexible with it and have an open mind and try not to force what you think the story is with the program. You just kind of let them tell it themselves.
How have you tried to work with basketball? How is that relationship? How do you guys work on a daily basis? Because you are around so much.
So that is I'll start with the video team specifically because that's a tough one when you come in. Because Josh Revis is an absolutely unbelievable videographer. He shoots some amazing stuff. And it's hard to come in and say, Josh, this is great. Now, can you transfer all your footage onto a hard drive for me and I'll take it back to Bristol? Thank you, sir. So you kind of come in and say, how can we work together? How can what he's doing complement what we're doing? How can what we're doing complement what he's doing? So we got the ball rolling there, and that's been a great relationship. And then with the basketball program, you know, my main points of contact, Sean May, Eric Hoot, Steve Kirshner, Matt Bowers, are some of the easiest people to work with. I come in and I'm transparent with them on what I would like to do. They sometimes tell me, no way. They sometimes tell me, yeah, let's go for it. But I think as long as you're upfront and have those conversations and treat them with respect, they tend to reciprocate it.
How about Roy Williams? How did that introduction and relationship progress?
So I would say with Coach, it's a little bit slower. I took it from a stance of just trying to be respectful from the start. This is not a secret that Caroline has never done anything like this before. So one of the first things I did when they had asked me if I wanted to do this show, and I got assigned to it, I just started reading everything I could about Dean Smith, because I figured if I understand Dean Smith, I might understand a little bit more of Roy Williams. So as I started reading through, I'm hearing in his book, The Carolina Way, how he had never let anybody into the locker room. How if the president of the United States wanted to come into his locker room pregame, he would have said no. So I'm, okay, this is going to be a challenge. So there were just certain things that I looked at and said, from a privacy aspect, I'm not going to go there. From a respect standpoint, I'm not going to go there. But I think slowly, as I just went through it, I thought to myself, if I'm transparent with him, if I ask him for an interview and I ask for 10 minutes and I keep it to 10 minutes and I start building that trust, then we kind of get the ball rolling. And that's another reason that we started filming the show in July, because by the time the season got here, I didn't want anyone to even notice that I was here. I want the players to walk past me in the hallway like I don't exist, which is strange to say, but it's really what you need. And I think we've gotten to that point. I really haven't had anything but positive experiences with Coach Williams. He might crack jokes on me. Jones knows that firsthand.
No, that's a good thing. That means you're in when you get the jokes cracked on you.
Yeah, and usually I'm the brunt of it, but it's all in joke form. It's all jovial, so I don't mind it. And it's funny, the background on that story before the Roy Williams Live. So I'm at practice 2 days before that, and for the listeners that don't know, I was wearing Adidas, and I was.
We'll bleep that out. Don't worry.
Yeah, we've got a censor button. We're good.
As Coach calls it, three stripes. Maybe another bleep there. And he sent Eric Hoots over to me before practice. As soon as he walked in the gym, he saw my shoes and he sent Hoots over. And Hoots goes, Coach wanted me to tell you one thing. And whenever anyone says Coach wants me to tell you something, I'm like, this might not be great. And he goes, don't ever walk in this gym again wearing those shoes. And it was, and Coach is over there laughing. And then I just hadn't had a chance in 2 days to go buy a new pair. So I show up at Roy Williams Live. I'm hiding in the background because I don't want to be in the way of people that are there to see Coach. And sure enough, he finds out that I'm hiding in the back, spots my shoes. And needless to say, the next day at practice, I showed up wearing these Nike SBs that I have on right now.
There you go. Chris, see, you're a quick learner. That's what we need.
Coachable. Yeah. Coachable.
You said that you came to some ideas or came with to basketball with ideas that they said absolutely no. What were some of those ideas?
Having a physical camera operator in the locker room. It's not something that they're 100% comfortable with. And to that, I understand. Josh Revis is also in there. So why have two people in there? I haven't brought up going to coaches' meetings or players' meetings. There are just certain things that I think in just talking with Sean and the guys that I'm not even going to ask, because number one, they might not be great for the show. You know, we might not need it. From my standpoint, I want to do a lot more storytelling about the guys on the team. I want to do storytelling about the coaches, where they came from, give the fans a better understanding of what makes this program so special. So there are certain places that I feel like I don't need to be. You know, the medical room at times is another one of them. I like to give Doug his space to do his job. So I try to approach it as to not be as invasive as possible. So I try to stay out of the way. I don't think that this team is here to do a reality show. I think this team is here to win basketball games, and they're here to coach young men to become better people. And I think my job is to document that while not getting in the way of any of that.
You mentioned reading up on Coach Smith earlier, so that may have answered what I'm about to ask you. But how much did you know about Carolina basketball? You said you were a sports fan. Did you know much about the Tar Heels specifically, though, going into this?
I did, because I worked at Raycom for about 7 years. So
right.
I spent a lot of time up at NC State, Duke, and Carolina, Wake Forest. So I have a decent understanding of the history of Carolina basketball, but I've learned a heck of a lot more being around it the last 5 months. And you just gain such a great deal of respect for it. From the way that Coach Smith laid out what this program does, the way that every coach, or the both coaches since then, you know, have followed directly in his footsteps. At a lot of schools, you can see a coaching tree. I'm not sure that at many other schools you're going to see a replica of the original just continue on down the line. All the way through, if you saw episode two, you saw UNC Wilmington's head coach, C.B. McGrath, and he runs his practice the same way Coach Smith does. Coach Smith, Coach Williams. See where I get confused there so easily. But even when he reads his thought of the days at the beginning of practice, he says it the same way. Offensively, Armando. Coach says it the exact same way. You know, they run their conditioning at the end of the practice based the same way that Coach Williams runs his conditioning. It's incredibly impressive, and it tells you a lot about who Coach Williams is, that he has so many people that look at him the way that they do, that players look at him as a father figure, that he is that important to the former players, that he's a mentor to every coach that comes through here and works with him. It's incredibly impressive from the outside looking in, and once you're kind of on the inside, it's even more so.
As you mentioned, Carolina's not really done something like this before. So in terms of the audience, almost everything they see is going to be new to them. What have you learned about Carolina fans and what they want to see as you've gotten feedback on what you've done?
I think all of the just being able to see the players anywhere other than the court, I think just excites people. I think to some degree, Carolina fans may take for granted winning. I've learned that two game slides go a long way and two game victories go a long way. Phil Ford told us that the other day. They're just a passionate fan base. They're lucky enough to have a great program that they get to root for. And I'm lucky to be able to shine a light on kind of why that program wins. When you're around it, you see why they win so much, because there's a method to the madness. Everything is for a purpose.
As I've told you, my wife is the biggest fan of this show and thinks it should be an hour every day, which I'm sure you would thoroughly enjoy. How do you decide what makes the cut when you only have an hour roughly each month? And has there been anything that you thought, man, this is great, but then you get in the editing room and you realize, I don't know if this really has a home?
Yeah, there's a lot of that, and I'm sure there'll be more of that in show three. I'm scripting it right now. Before we started the podcast, I was...
Act one, Jones and Adam come into the studio. They are handsome.
Two handsome men walk into the studio.
Yeah, you guys have a big part in the show. You guys know that.
I noticed that Adam's the one who doesn't believe in the Tar Heels, whereas I do believe in the Tar Heels. That's the key to the show, really.
That was one of the first things when I started scripting. I went, I really need a radio show. What radio show do I pick? And as soon as I listened to the Carolina Insider Pod, there's my storyline, guys.
We were so pleased that one listener pointed out that it was kind of similar to Friday Night Lights, and we were like slinging Sammy Mead. That's one of the highest compliments I've ever gotten.
You might crucify me for this. I've never seen Friday Night Lights.
Chris, we're going to have to ask you to leave the studio. This interview is over.
Turn this off.
Maybe that's my homework in between editing now.
There you go.
You need to watch that. It's on Hulu, I think. Yeah, you should watch it.
We're
talking about the TV show, not the movie.
Yeah. Let me get back real quick to what Adam's question, though. This is, and you can continue with your answer, but as a extra question in this question, how many hours of footage? So when you get it down to 1 hour show, how many hours of footage do you have to get down to that 1 hour?
So to answer that question, I'll simplify it this way. They practice for roughly two and a half hours usually. I'll end that practice with just about 5 to 6 hours of footage from one practice.
Wow.
We finish a game and we'll have 8 hours of footage from game day. Right now, I don't know if this means anything to you guys, or if anybody knows the file sizes that computers run on. I have roughly 18 terabytes of footage and we're 7 games into the season.
Holy cow.
So to say that we leave some things on the cutting room floor is an understatement. We leave a lot of great stuff on the cutting room floor. The scene from episode one where we were with CK, Garrison, Sterling, and B-Rob at home, we left a ton of stuff out of that one. A lot of good funny stuff. One of the things in that house is everything is raised about 2 feet. So the cabinets are up higher. The microwave's up higher. Garrison uses the top of the refrigerator as a shelf. and all of that stuff got cut.
I'd starve if I lived
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that'd be bad news for you.
They did joke with all of us. My wife can never reach it. My wife's 5'2". She can never get to the microwave. But yeah, we leave a lot out. I try to approach it from the standpoint of, if I was a diehard fan of this team, what would I care about and what would I want to see? And oftentimes that's coach just in practice. You know, I try to live in certain moments with Coach Williams when we're lucky enough to accompany him on a lunchtime walk. I purposefully didn't put any shots of any of the players, B-rolls we call it, too much music under it, because I want fans to be able to live in that moment with coach on a lunchtime walk, something that they might not ever see or get to experience. There's just certain moments where you go, man, this is really cool. Practice is another one of them. As soon as we walked out of practice for the first time as a crew, we kind of looked at each other and went, whoa, because you just hear how coach explains things, how hands-on he is, the teamwork he has with his assistant coaches, hearing Hubert teach kids how to shoot the basketball. There are just certain moments where you got to pinch yourself. You're like, am I really here to be able to see this? And there's a lot of that happens here. So I think being able to bring those moments to the fans has been really cool.
How do you handle a difficult, like Carolina's in a difficult stretch right now. Tar Heels are not playing great. They've had a couple losses. How do you try to approach that? Tell the truth, not be overly critical. I mean, because I know you don't work for Carolina necessarily. So how do you balance all of that?
So that's tough. I think there's a difference between showing a struggle and showing what a situation is and dragging something through the mud. You know, we're not going to go into this episode and say we're going to do half the show on the Ohio State game and the Virginia game. We could, but there's no purpose for it. Who wants to relive that? And as I look at it, with the Virginia game, I think I look at things a little bit differently. What I saw there from my standpoint was a really tough kid in Armando Bacot that we didn't think was going to play that came out and played. I saw Jeremiah Francis smiling after the game because he had just played, not smiling because of how the game went, but smiling because he got to play competitive basketball for the first time in quite a while. So those are the things that I look for. It's, you know, you're going to show the struggles. You're going to show some of the tough losses. But I try to look for the shining moments in them. Ohio State was another one. We weren't sure if Cole was going to play. There are some questions behind that. So seeing the heart that these guys have is just as important to me as showing the struggle. And I'm sure they'll right the ship. I mean, you would think as we get further along in the season, things will start getting better. So I'm not too worried about it right now. But I tend to look at things a little bit differently because I'm looking at things for what storyline can I fit into the show and what makes sense to me here. And luckily, you can usually find shining positive moments during, you know, tough games.
This is kind of a weirdo technical question. You talked about how good Josh is at shooting stuff. Josh Revis, who does a lot of the stuff people see on social media with Carolina basketball.
Yep.
We see so much more today in terms of game stuff than we ever have before. So what's the key to shooting the same thing that everyone else sees? I see the game, but I don't see it how Josh sees it. From someone who understands all that, how do you do that well?
So the crazy thing about Josh, and this might be too technical as well, is he shoots a lot of this stuff with still photography lenses on a camera that was built for still photography, which for people that work in the industry is just crazy that you can follow a ball the way that he does. But I think it's just a feel for the game and an eye for it. The way that they're able to zoom in at the exact right time as someone's pulling up for a jump shot where you see the ball spinning off their fingertips, that's a skill. It takes a lot of muscle memory, practice to get there. And I'm extremely lucky that Josh can do that because not all schools have the video department that Carolina has. The fan base is incredibly lucky because you're going to see great stuff on social media. And not every school has that advantage there. And then for the rest of the crew that I have, TA Films shoots most of the games for us, and they worked on All or Nothing with the Carolina Panthers and the Michigan Wolverines, and they're some of the best game shooters in the business. And Two Waves Media is the crew that you'll see here most over the last few months. The same way, they worked with me at Raycom Sports. Me and the two twins that run that company, we're all associate producers together. And they've branched out and started their own company, and they see things differently. You know, I might see a moment at practice that looks cool, but I turn around, one of them might be poking out behind the bleacher, shooting it from there, and you just get a camera angle that just feels different. So we try to shoot things in a way that brings the viewer in, where it doesn't just feel like a camera in the top of the concourse looking down at practice. We try to find spots where it really can draw you into the moment.
Chris, I'd be interested in the ACC network as a whole, couple months into it now, just from the people who are there, your perspective of how it's gone, what you guys are trying to accomplish with the channel in total.
So I haven't gotten to watch a ton of the live broadcasts. I watch a lot more of our shows. I think the biggest thing is like I'd said earlier, access and storytelling. So right out of the gate, one of the first things that I did was champions a coaching conversation. So I brought Tom Rinaldi onto it, and we had him sit down with five national championship coaches. We sat down with Tony Bennett, Jim Boeheim, Muffet McGraw, and Dabo Swinney in Amelia Island at the spring meeting. And we just had a very honest conversation about how they coach, why they coach. And then when we got back to the Triangle area, we brought in Roy Williams and Coach K and did one-on-ones with each of them. So we're trying to bring the bigger names from the conference right to your living room. And I think we've done a fairly good job of that. You know, it's not just games. This conference has a really storied history at most of the programs that are involved here. So we want to shine a spotlight on that for people that may not know the history, for people that may not know the current players. We want to bring that stuff right to you because there's so much more than just games.
How do you tell the story of, I guess, 15 teams, 15 schools, 15 different perspectives on one channel? How do you try and do that?
It's a tough thing to do. I think you have to spread it out over time. I think with shows like this, it's trying to find another program next year to go to give an inside look and to keep shuffling through. We do a lot of it. You know, we did for football. We had a crew with Louisville all through the off season. Actually, the same crew that's here at Carolina, TA Films. So they did an hour-long preseason deal on Louisville football and to show what Scott Satterfield was doing up there. We had crews with Clemson throughout the off season, throughout the year last year. We worked with UVA's video department to bring that unbelievable doc to air. Dave Pierpont was a producer on that, did a fantastic job. So I don't know that you can do it all at one time, I think is the answer. It's you know, the fan bases that may not be on air just need to be patient, because I promise you, we'll get you on there. It's important to us to show all that stuff. But it's an exciting network to work for. We have great leadership. You know, everybody that I work with, it just feels, to steal Carolina's mantra, it feels like a family.
You mentioned the Panthers. You mentioned Michigan. What are some of your favorite I have a cool job stories of things that you've gotten to do?
Man, there are so many pinch me moments. You know, working with Tom Rinaldi was one.
Does he make everybody cry?
Absolutely.
Why is that?
He makes me cry every time I'm on the phone with him. Yeah, I've learned so much from the way that he interviews people. But it's so funny. You work with so many people that you've watched on TV for so long as a sports fan, not at ESPN. I studied what Tom Rinaldi did. I studied how Gene Wojciechowski told stories. I always watched Jen Latta's pieces. And then once you're actually working with them, I just try to soak it all up. I don't approach anything thinking I'm the best producer, I'm the best editor, I'm the best videographer. I'm constantly watching people around me to see what I like and what I don't like. And more oftentimes than not, I'm just taking notes on what I like, because I'm blessed to work with the best people in the industry, Marty Smith, Ryan McGee. But what you'd ask, pinch me moments, man, being in Ghana with Ziggy Ansah. He is a defensive end that used to play for the Detroit Lions. I'm blanking on where he is now. I want to say he's in Seattle. But I got to go to Accra, Ghana, and document one of the first American football camps to ever take place on the continent of Africa. I got to watch a bunch of kids come out there with no shoes on or shoes with holes in the bottom and see Ziggy give them new shoes, maybe the only pair of new shoes that they've ever had in their entire lives. So you could see so many powerful moments. You know, being in Rome with Jim Harbaugh and Michigan's football team and standing on the floor of the Coliseum talking to Coach Harbaugh about that. Just crazy. You have so many moments where, how did I end up here? You know, the draft academy, you know, I was at the draft last year and right before we're getting ready to leave the hotel, I'm with Josh Jacobs in his hotel room, and he's trying to fit his wallet into his perfectly tailored suit, and it won't fit. And he goes, "Hey, Chris, hold this for me," and toss it to me. I'm like, "Dude, when am I giving you back?" And he's like, "Oh, at the post-draft party." I'm like, well, at least I know I'm going to get my interview after the draft, because he's got to get his wallet back. So it's so hard to explain without sounding like bragging. But I don't take any of those moments for granted, because I may never get them again. They're all very special.
Okay, because we want to steal his methods. What is it? You said watching Tom Rinaldi interview people has taught you stuff about interviewing people. Like what?
He listens better than anybody that I've ever met. Everything that you say, he is soaking in. John Stewart did the same thing when I did interviews with him. He walks into a room, Chris Connolly as well. They walk into a room and they see things that I wouldn't see. You know, they're going to look at a person's bookshelf and see what books they read. You know, they look at their pictures of their family and kind of piece together a story before they even speak to somebody. And Tom told me great advice was that people want to talk. Our job is to connect their thoughts and keep them talking. So Tom asks a lot of very simple questions that you think, man, that can't be the right question to ask there. But it 100% is. And, you know, it's incredible to witness. And Chris Connolly interviewing children, unbelievable. I mean, we at ESPN, we're just so lucky to have the on-air talent that we do, the producers that we do, the videographers that we do, because we get to learn from everybody around us, and that's a blessing.
All right, I have two more questions. I know you got to go soon. Number one, you mentioned earlier when you first started at Raycom, kind of all the different things that you had the opportunity to do. If you were talking to a young journalist or someone who is trying to get into sports journalism, how important do you think that diversity of skill set is for a young journalist?
I think it's the most important thing that you can do, to walk into a job, look at what other people are doing, and just be open to learning those. You know, most of us are going to come in at the absolute bottom rung, grabbing coffee for whoever the man in charge is. And I think being open to saying, yeah, I'll try editing. I'll try doing video work. I'll try being in front of the camera. I'll try being a technical director. Literally anything that you can do, if you work hard, somebody is going to notice. And I think it's Marty Smith that always preaches it. Work hard and treat people right, and the rest of it will take care of itself. And I think if you come at any job, whether it's journalism, TV, wherever you are, if you work hard and you treat people right, good things are going to happen.
All right, last thing. When's the next episode? When can people anticipate seeing these next several episodes of the show?
So the next episode comes out December 23rd. I think it's at 7 p.m.
No Roy Williams Live that night. There used to be one, but now there isn't one. So now your night's free to watch the new All Access show. Okay, sorry, Chris.
Perfect. There we go. Tune into the ACC Network, December 23rd, early Christmas present. That episode's gonna spend a lot of time at the Bahamas. Gonna give you a good behind the scenes look at the water park fun with all the guys. The practices that they did there. We were lucky enough to be on the team plane with them. So I gave a camera to Christian Keeling. So you might see a little CK cam on the way there. And then we'll go all the way through basically the West Coast road trip in that show. We haven't set air dates for the rest. I'm kind of taking them a month at a time. I think that the next one after that will be sometime towards the end of January. We'll release that at the end of episode 3. So yeah, they'll be about 3 to 4 weeks apart and running all the way through the end of the season.
How close to when people watch this on December 23rd at 7 will you have been in the editing room finishing it?
So our production schedule on this is kind of madness. We edit the show in 10 days. And for anyone that's ever worked on a show, a 10-day edit for an hour-long show is wild. So
long or short? There's people who don't know.
It is very short. You know, there are people that will work on an hour-long show for months. So we go into it and just pedal to the metal and grind for 10 days, get the show out. We might not finish it until 3 or 4 hours before you see it.
Wow.
I mean, I've worked on stories for SportsCenter that I'm finishing within minutes of when it's on air, that I'm in the edit suite and they're promoing it on SportsCenter and I post it during a commercial break before they come out to it. You know, it's sometimes high pressure, but it's always fun and we always get the job done. But I always want to use all of the allotted time that I have, because the fan base deserves to have the best show possible. So if I have time to be working, I should be working.
This may, again, this might be too technical, but I feel like there's people who need to know about stuff like this. What did you learn?
And by some people, he means his wife.
What did you learn from doing the stuff on Deadline, really tight turnarounds? You're putting it together as it's airing. That's helped you when you have a little more time to spread out and work on something like this. How do those two go together?
That's tough. I feel like I'm at my most creative when my back's against the wall, because I'm willing to take more risks. Because I think sometimes you can have too much time to work on a project, and you can nitpick it to death, and by the end of it, you're where did I lose my identity in the course of editing this story for 2 or 3 months? So I think there's a lot of advantages to it. You know, you learn to use your time wisely. You learn to use every minute you have available to make sure that you're taking notes in the field. So when something good happens at practice, or when somebody says something funny off the court, like when they had the two holes in a straw argument, you're immediately writing that down, going, this happened on this day at this time. That's another crazy thing, is I have notebooks full of every day that we shoot, down to the minute of what player is doing what thing at what time and what location, so that when we get into edit, I can tell my editor, go to, you know, November 25th, 2019 folder at 8:37 p.m. and find this soundbite. So everything is pretty detailed and logged as we go. So I think the biggest thing is just being efficient.
What do you think is the personality of this team? I think you have a unique view of it because you came in from the outside, didn't know any of these guys previously, didn't know these coaches. What do you think the personality of this group is?
In one word?
Sure.
Fun. I think this team enjoys what they're doing. You know, they work hard on the court. They give it everything they have. They work their butts off at practice and in games. But off the court, these guys are just fun. Like, we spent 4 hours just about going through water slides and lazy rivers and hanging out with them in the Bahamas. And you just see how they interact. They interact like they're brothers. You know, Cole's giving people a hard time out on the river, making fun of Huff as he flips out of a tube. You know, everywhere they go, they just act like kids. You know, that's one thing I think we forget until you see them in those moments, that these are 17, 18, 19-year-old kids. And they're having fun. You know, that they work hard when they need to, and it's all business on game days and practice days. But when they're able to step away and just hang out, those are the coolest moments, I think, to see, because you get to see who these kids really are. You know, in the Bahamas, Cole and Armando stopping to get milkshakes on the way to the Lazy River. Cole getting a milkshake every day, them giving him a hard time about his diet because he, as they said, I think they said he eats like a 14-year-old. It's chicken fingers, pizza, and milkshakes. So you just kind of get to laugh and enjoy time with them. They gave me a really hard time in the water park. You might see a little bit of that. CK and Sterling making fun of me because I had my shirt off with the waterproof camera going through the Lazy River. So they're just funny kids to be around. I fell out of the tube like 4 times. I had road rash on my whole shoulder. So I'm putting my life on the line to bring this show to air. But that was a funny one. I fell right in front of Ant, and he reacted as if I was drowning in 2.5 feet of water in Atlantis. So they're just such a fun bunch. I look forward to seeing all of them. I walk in and I can count on a few things. I can count on Christian Keelan giving me a hard time about my Carolina Panthers season because he's a Falcons fan. I can count on Shea Rush talking to me about the last round of golf that he just had. Coach Williams, usually the same thing, bonding over golf. But there's just certain things, you know. Leakey is going to give a look into the camera as if he's a model. Sterling always wants to use the slate that we use, the time code slate that you clap before interviews. Sterling loves that thing. So whenever he sees it, he runs over and wants to clap it. They're a really funny bunch, and I'm glad that they're enjoying the show, because that's one of the things that I put a big emphasis on at the beginning of shows like this, is I want the people we're filming with to enjoy us being there, and I don't want to be a distraction to them. I want them to walk away from shoots with us and go, man, that was fun. Because they don't have to spend time with us. They could easily turn walk the other direction. You know, Josh Jacobs wasn't on Hard Knocks. If you watch that, he was a rookie and avoided the cameras at all costs. So I always want to go out of my way to make sure people are enjoying that we're around and that we're bringing the best possible product to air. You know, another cool thing with the show that I didn't mention was there's a lot of Carolina connections in the crew of this show. RCP, Joe Disney, he's a Carolina grad. He's the one that helps me with storylines for the show, you know, talks me through in the field what we're doing, just an extra mind and an extra set of eyes on everything. And he raves about his time at Carolina. One of our main directors of photography, Richard Brook, was the president of Carolina Fever when he was in school here. Mm. So we have people around that know the history, that care about the university. You know, we're always impartial, but it is nice when people get to come back and do something at their alma mater. It's always special to them. In journalism, we're never going to root for a team, but it is a special moment when you can come back to the place that you went to school and have that experience.
Did you know that texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds? And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of an entire football field with what? Your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. So don't text and drive. Go to trustedchoice.com/goheels. It's Adam's homepage, trustedchoice.com/goheels. Find an independent insurance agent near you to learn more. Adam, are you eagerly anticipating the next edition of the All Access Show?
Yes. Yeah. Well, now we've got the air date. I don't think we knew that before Chris told us. And now we know. Mark our calendars, set our DVRs. As he said, a little Christmas present for Tar Heel fans. Yeah,
December 23rd. Got some Bahamas footage. Adam, do we see you in the Bahamas footage? Are you there frolicking in the pool?
I think they had to put one of those black boxes over my Speedo. I'm not sure whether that was going to clear the sensors. Chris was working on that.
Adam, let's talk a little military bowl. Tar Heels heading to Annapolis, Maryland to face Temple on December 27th at noon. And Adam, I feel like this is a solid bowl location for the Tar Heels. I think you've got a better date than the 26th, and there's no basketball conflict, anything like that. I think the 26th is really hard to get people to, especially if it's not close. 27th, I do, and I know that's only one day, but I do think it makes a difference. I think Annapolis is a fun place to be. You and I were there with Carolina basketball a couple years ago where Carolina played in a Armed Forces Classic kind of deal.
Veterans Classic.
Veterans Classic, thank you. At the beginning of the season of the 15-16 season. And actually Carolina played Temple in that game. So that was the first time I'd been to Annapolis. It's a neat spot to go. The campus of the Naval Academy is beautiful. And it's not terribly far from Chapel Hill in the Triangle. The D.C. area, we've talked about this before with some Rams Club stops. There's a lot of Tar Heel fans there. There's a lot of young Tar Heel fans there, just a lot of young alumni who are in government, who are in that D.C. area. And I think that will be a boost for the Tar Heels. And while Temple may not blow your socks off name value, I do think it's a solid opponent that's had a good year. They're 8-4. They beat Memphis, who's going to the Cotton Bowl. They beat an ACC team in Georgia Tech this season. They beat East Carolina. So they have done some things that I think Carolina fans can recognize. And it's a positive step. I think it's a game you can win. It's not a game you're going to roll the ball out there and definitely win, but you can win it. And I just think all those things make it an attractive spot for Carolina in relation to what the Tar Heels did on the field this season. I mean, would you love to be in the Orange Bowl or the College Football Playoff? Of course you would. But I think in relation to what the Tar Heels did, you got a decent date against a decent opponent in a good location for your fan base. I think it's a win.
It's a good springboard type of game that you can use in that way to go into 2020, because although it's the last game of the 2019 season, it sort of starts off your 2020 season. And I think all the things you said are true. I think Annapolis is an underrated area to go. It'll be beautifully decorated, I'm sure, in the Christmas time frame. the Naval Academy. Don't know what'll be going on there at that time, but if you've never been, you need to go and walk around and see all the stuff there. It's incredible. Nice waterfront downtown area with lots of restaurants and stuff. It has what you're looking for in a bold location.
Yes.
And so definitely worth the trip.
Especially one that you're probably not going to be there a super long. This isn't
right,
like
it's not a 2 week stay.
Right, you're not going for that long, but it's also when you consider the date and everything, that's probably not reasonable. I think it's perfect for a 1 or 2 night stay if you're going up there just for the game. And so I really think if you're thinking about going, and I don't just say this because it's the Tar Heels, and of course we want great Tar Heel representation, and I'll also say, I mean, Temple's, of course, in Philadelphia. They're not very far away, so they're going to have fans there too. But if you're thinking about it, I would encourage you to go, and I hope you know that Adam and I wouldn't steer you wrong on that just to say it. I do think it would be a fun place to go and an important game and a fun game for Carolina as they try to cap this off and end the season in a real positive way.
Well, and everybody's looking for something to do in that time frame between Christmas and New Year's. That's why the home basketball game in that time is always so popular. Annapolis is one of those places where if you go, when you come back, you go, you know what? I'm glad we did that. That was fun. That's what kind of place Annapolis is. And also, you'll get to see Sam Howell throw some more touchdown passes.
Yeah. As far as Temple itself, the Owls have a very good defensive group this year. I think they're, at least their numbers and the way their season has played out suggests that they're probably better on defense than they are on offense this year. They do have a couple of really good receivers. Each have nearly 1,000 yards receiving on the year. Their top tailback's at 900 or so yards on the season. So they do have some pieces there. But I think the strength of their team is on the defensive side. They're giving up fewer than 400 yards per game. And so it'll be a good challenge for Carolina. And, you know, I think sometimes whether you win or lose bowl games isn't that big a deal, quite honestly. I think this one is important for Carolina because I think 7-6 just feels different than 6-7.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And it doesn't – I want to go back and say what I said before the state game, which I also think is true. It doesn't make you feel like this season is any less good if the Tar Heels don't win this game. But I just think it just makes you feel even better about things if they do win it.
Well, think back to Mack Brown 1.0. Winning that Peach Bowl was important and made you feel different about the trajectory of the program than playing in the Peach Bowl.
Right.
And this game has a chance to be similar. One other football-related thing, Mack Brown on game day.
Yeah.
On ESPN College game day. That's the kind of thing we talked about this summer and throughout the fall of just when you get it and you understand. He was on the ground in Atlanta for less than 3 hours. He was on TV for probably less than 10 minutes. That was worth it. It was worth it to have North Carolina football right there on the set on that day when everyone's thinking about college football. And not only that, he knows how to make that happen. I didn't see any other random schools asked to come up there for 10 minutes. He did that because he is Mack Brown, and they like him. They want him to be part of it. He's good at it, and it's beneficial for them, ESPN, and it's beneficial for the Tar Heels. And Mack Brown being willing to say, you know what, I'll spend my Saturday morning going down to Atlanta to be on game day for 10 minutes to talk about the ACC championship game. Everybody benefited from that, but you only get that with Mack Brown.
Yeah, I mean, sitting there rocking the – because Jimbo Fisher was on also – from Texas A&M, Jimbo had the open collar jacket look going on. Coach Brown,
he looked like he was going to sing at a lounge.
Coach Brown flying the Tar Heel colors. I mean, and even though I don't even think they talked about the Tar Heels. I mean, his purpose there was to talk about the ACC championship game, which makes sense. Carolina played both teams and was competitive to the point they probably felt like they could have gotten one or both of those games against Clemson and Virginia. And didn't even talk about Carolina necessarily. It's not like they said, so tell me about how awesome Sam Howell is. But you have the NC logo right there, front and center, as you said, for 10 minutes or so. And is that going to change one recruit's mind or do so? I don't know. Probably not that one instance, but it's just part of it. It's just part of the whole building process. It's just one piece of it.
And it some kid's mom was watching that show and came away from that going, you know what, Johnny? I like that Mac Brown fella. I wouldn't mind you playing for him.
Yeah.
He's not going to sign because of that. But when the Tar Heels called Johnny, the mama's going to go, I remember you. I liked you on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
Adam, I do just want to mention women's soccer. We talked about it at the top of the show. And just a heartbreaking loss. I mean, I think Carolina and Stanford, from what I saw, and not that I've been following women's soccer every moment of every play this year, they seem to me to be the best two teams. They were the number one overall seed in Stanford. I think Carolina was the number two overall seed. They were ranked 1 and 2. And so they were the best two teams. Stanford was very talented. They were the number one offense in the country. Carolina played them toe-to-toe. And you just hate – I mean, you hate it for them that's the second straight year they've lost in the championship game in a very close match. This one in penalty kicks. You feel bad for the young lady who had it stopped in the PK sequence. Carolina is – we know what they are in women's soccer. We know what Anson Dorrance is, and he'll be the best of all time regardless of what happened in that game when he does decide to finish. But you hate it for this group this year because they were so close, played well, and came up short in a really difficult spot.
And they were so fun to watch, and yeah. It just felt like all of Carolina was watching that game. Everybody we've talked to since then is, I watched women's soccer on Sunday. That was a tough one. And as you said at the start, I think we can all agree, penalty kicks a terrible way to decide a national championship. It almost felt like by the time you played two overtimes and no one scored, all right, let's just all come back tomorrow. We'll play another game. We'll see what happens then, and then we'll decide rather than let's do these random penalty kicks, which in no way decided the best team. It looks like those were the two best teams. Do we know who the best team was? I don't really think so. Stanford's really good. Carolina's really good. So just an unfortunate end to what was a terrific season as per usual for that program.
So congratulations to Anson Dorrance and his group for another unbelievable year. I know they are bitterly disappointed today, but another fantastic season for them. Adam, do you have a list?
I do.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Few things on the list. Thank you to Donnie Barnes. He tweeted at us some very cool pictures of the bell tower.
It was after the state game, right?
Yes. I don't think Donnie took them. I think one of his friends took them. But one of them was sort of a time-lapse picture, and you could see the lights from the bus pulling up in front of the bell tower as it was lit blue, and it was just a very cool picture. So thank you. Jordan S. sent us a tweet, I think, and said, Anson Dorrance needs his own show on the Carolina Voices podcast channel, and can we make that happen?
Well, I agree with you that Anson Dorrance would be awesome. I'm not sure if we can make that happen. I will say this, and every time I talk about the Tar Heel Voices podcast channel, which if you have not subscribed, I would encourage you to do so, but I would also tell you it's very much kind of a work in progress right now, just in that we are trying to decide. I mean, not that we're trying to decide. We're trying to make sure that we have some great content to get out there for you, how to make all that happen, who's interested in doing it, who's willing to do it. So there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered, but I agree. I mean, we've had Anson Dorrance on the podcast before, and he is an unbelievable orator. He tells stories that just hook you in because he's so good at telling stories. And so he's a wonderful public speaker, and he would be good in this format. So yes, I agree with that. Can we make it happen? I don't know. But right now you will definitely get Courtney Banghart. You will definitely get Mike Fox. We are working, as we mentioned, on getting the Coleman Scott Show on there as well. And so there's some good content that's already populating that channel. And I think what's so exciting about it from our perspective is that it's wide open. It's open-ended. We can really do just about anything on there because we know that there is some interest in Carolina athletics outside of football and basketball. We understand football and basketball are going to be the drivers. That's what we focus on the most here on the Carolina Insider, although, of course, we also talk to other people. But we wanted to have a more dedicated channel for some of that other content, and we didn't want to clutter you up on the Carolina Insider feed in case that's not something that you're interested in. So that's why we went that direction.
We've been telling you, if you want to get in on the ground level of the next big Carolina thing, Courtney Banghart women's basketball.
I know you love Courtney Banghart. She's done a great job so far.
Tar Heels are undefeated, and they're killing people.
They look very purposeful in what they're doing.
Speaking of stars, did you watch DaBaby on Saturday Night Live?
I didn't, but I know you did.
Well, yeah. I've gone back and watched it over and over. Of course, we know DaBaby, the official rapper of the pod, thanks to Leaky Black bringing him to our attention. Remember back when Leaky Black told us about DaBaby, and we were like, "Da what now?
Yeah.
What is this? I've never heard of this musical artist that you're telling us about, Leaky."
Talk about ground floor.
Yeah. Barely a year later, DaBaby's on Saturday Night Live. He performed Bop, in which he had what I have heard are called some acrobatic dancers who joined him. They went straight from there to Kansas's late night performance. He also performed the song that I always mispronounce. I know that's surprising. I say Suge. I don't know what the proper way is.
Hey, it sounds good.
Both, of course, were fantastic performances that only DaBaby can bring to you. We got several tweets from people who said they watched it and weren't quite sure what was going on. I think that's what you often see when you first see DaBaby.
Yeah.
You have to really get in rhythm with them. He was also in a skit with J-Lo. I think now she's Jennifer Lopez, not J-Lo. The Hip Hop Carolers. That was funny. He had a smaller part than I would have liked DaBaby to have, but any part really, no part on Saturday Night Live is a small part. So we'll have to ask former pod guest Brian Tucker, Saturday Night Live writer, if he got to hang with DaBaby. Also on the list, we try to have a lot of fun on the pod because in general, this is fun what we do and Carolina games are fun. And for the most part, we have fun doing it. Sometimes there's real life stuff that happens. So three real life things, all that have happened just sort of over the weekend. Speaking of DaBaby, Juice WRLD passed away on Sunday. It sounds like just very fluky, but he was 21 years old. I mean, we've talked about him in the various top rappers in the game stuff, and he was. Mm-hmm. And just 21 years old, that's horrible. Pete Frates, who we covered at Boston College as a player when we were doing baseball for Carolina, Pete Frates was playing for Boston College, developed ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, at a very early age and passed away on Monday. He was 34.
He raised more than $200 million for research and the fight against ALS to try to learn more and learn more about the disease. What an awful, awful, not that any disease is pleasant. What an awful disease, but what a legacy for him to leave about the knowledge and the money raised to help fight that disease.
And then if you tuned into the Tar Heel Sports Network on Sunday, you heard Eric speak wonderfully about Linda Woods, who is sick and going through some challenges, and I just thought he did a great job describing what Linda Woods means and has meant to the Carolina basketball program and all the players who have come through the basketball office. She was a mother to every one of those players who came through there when she was working in the basketball office, and they still all feel just as Eric described in his message on Sunday so strongly about her. So certainly we're thinking about her and her family, and as is everyone related to Carolina.
Just a terrific human being, as kind a person as you can ever find. Hands down.
After that, I think we probably need to go to Disney World with Scott Maitland.
Yep.
Big friend of the pod, and also apparently a friend of some other very important, influential people.
Yeah, Scott sent us some videos on Twitter of he, I'm assuming, was in Disney World with his family, and in the span of about 10 minutes, ran into both Disney World version of the Blues Brothers and Disney World version of Doc Brown from Back to the Future. And so Scott, being an avid pod listener, knew that both of those entities had been discussion points of ours in the past, and got them both the Blues Brothers and Doc Brown to give a go heels on a quick Twitter vid.
The Doc Brown Disney guy was good.
He was committed to his character.
Yes, he was.
He was committed.
Hey, Scott, is it time to say go Tar Heels?
Sure is.
When isn't it?
We got an email from Brian Lester, who says he's a big listener to the pod. He listens to every single episode, so thank you, Brian. He had a question about Carolina basketball home games. Early in Brian's tenure at Carolina, around 2013, he remembers hearing that all fans remained standing until the first basket was made by the heels. But lately, he doesn't think this practice is in effect, and he was curious if he is remembering this tradition correctly, or is this something that never existed? What's going on there? I think that was the women's games.
Yes, I was going to say the same thing. That does happen at places. And we have been to places as the visitor with Carolina where they do that, where everybody remains standing until the home team scores. I don't remember that ever being the case for Carolina men's basketball. I do think it was the case for women's basketball for a while. I don't know if and when that ceased to occur, but I do think that you're right. I think in that time period, that was a tradition the women were trying to get going. But I don't think the men ever did it, at least not that I remember.
Last thing, an update from our good friend Lauren, who, as you remember, has learned to love the pod and sometimes says "see you later, big grits" to random people after a few glasses of wine.
Yeah, hi, Lauren.
As everyone does. Lauren writes in with an update for us on her fiance, whose name is Shane. What up, Shane?
Yeah, Shane. Hey, Shane, I need to ask you about those classes sometime.
That's a callback right there. Lauren says, that was the best gift in the world, reading her message on the pod. Shane came home busting through the door being like, OMG, did you message my pod? And Lauren says she's not going to lie. She felt famous. Shane had no idea I messaged y'all, and he said he literally had to pull over on the side of the road because he was so shocked.
Shane, see, now, this is something I respect about Shane. Shane's been listening to the pod long enough that while he wasn't necessarily texting Adam while driving,
right,
he knew that he was distracted.
Right.
And if you're a distracted driver, you're a dangerous driver. So Shane, keeping his head on straight, pulled over to the side, got his wits back about him, got back into that roundabout, and rejoined the traffic.
I like that he called it my pod.
Yeah.
I like that. It is your pod, Shane. It's everybody's pod.
It's all our pods.
Yeah.
Kate Leslie sent us a...
Kate Leslie's got a lot going on.
She does have a lot going on. She sent us a tweet that I thought really summed up everybody's feelings late night on Sunday night. Because this tweet came in late from Kate. Now, Kate, I think, might be West Coast, though. I think she's West Coast.
Yep.
So not as late as it came in on the East Coast. She says she was binge-watching the new season of Mrs. Maisel? Maisel?
Sure. Maisel? Is he related to Yvonne?
It's a show.
Right.
I've heard of it. I don't watch it, but I've heard of it. That's not the important part about this tweet. She said she's drowning her sorrows, and now Carrie Elwes appears trying to lighten the mood. Kate Leslie says, thank you, sir. Thank you and your Magna Carta. That's right. As bad a week as it was, Adam, you can always find solace in the fact that the Magna Carta was signed in Carrie Elwes' backyard. All right? Look, if things are going wrong, if you're like Shane and you've got to pull over to the side of the road because you just can't do it anymore, just think about Carrie Elwes. That Magna Carta, a little piece of history right there, ties us all together, Adam. Gotta get back in time.
Centuries from now, a gentleman will come along who will change the course of
what they will then call cinema, but has not yet been invented. I would like to commemorate him. Hand me the quill pen and put the stone monument here. Here in Cary Elwes's backyard, we have signed the Magna Carta and changed the course of human history.
Do you have anything else?
I've got a quick vacation from life.
Okay. We all need one of those right now, Adam.
That's what I thought, too. I thought it was appropriate for today. Travel with me, if you will, back to the Smith Center on Wednesday night of last week.
Adam, this doesn't sound like a vacation at all.
I told you, it's going to... Well, that's the life part. The vacation part's coming in just a minute. So, you're at the Smith Center. Those darn Buckeyes are playing their scrappy, tough D, and it's hard to score baskets. Armando Bacot's gone down. I don't know if he's going to play again anytime soon at this point in time. Very concerned. He's not putting any weight on his leg. I'm sitting there during a timeout. And what, to my wondering eyes, should appear? Pod listener Chris Furr, who just stopped by. He had a Coca-Cola can from the 2005 National Championship. And he said that he wanted to give that championship can to Pod Luxurious World Headquarters, and that was it. Things were bad. The Tar Heels weren't scoring. Armando was hurt. But then out of nowhere, there's Chris and a championship can from 2005.
Yeah,
that is a vacation from life. So thank you, Chris.
We now, Adam, thanks to Chris Furr, have 82 93 05 thanks to Chris, and 17. We can agree that we don't think there's a 57 Coca-Cola out there. 09, though, is floating out there. Got to find one. We're coming for you, 09. Chris, by the way, did that, Adam, because Chris and I had been conversing.
Oh, is that one I didn't see?
Yeah, one of the very few DMs that you weren't involved in. That I was supposed to send Chris a mailing address, and I didn't do it. Mm. So Chris, tired of my laziness,
right,
just took things into his own hands and took control and got it done. So Chris, we salute you, sir.
Well, and that's a lot of effort to bring that to the Smith Center. Like, yeah. You've got to put it in your clear bag or whatever you got, and they're like, sir?
Yeah, did he have to go, look, I am giving this to Adam Lucas.
Yeah.
It's an 05 championship Coke that Adam's going to put in Pod World Headquarters. I know you're not going to allow me here in the building, but I need to deliver this to Adam.
He wants to put this right beside the Goose Bowl. I think you know what I'm talking about. I need to come in with this 14-year-old can of soft drink.
So, Chris, thank you. And, by the way, and I know we mentioned this, we've had a lot of people reach out and go, hey, I've got this, talking about the Coke cans and people offering to give us some 80 or old, we've heard 8205, bunch of people. So thanks to everybody. We're getting close. But 09, if you have one, we'd love for you to join our team here in Luxurious Pod World Headquarters. Okay. The schedule is about to get wonky, Adam, here on the pod. So later this week, this is what we thought we would do. Carolina is playing Wofford, of course, in Carmichael on Sunday. While you think about that, before I tell you what we're going to do, Adam, would you like to hear from our friends at Mack Weldon?
Mack Weldon!
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thanks, Mack Weldon. Carolina's playing Wofford in Carmichael on Sunday. That game, by the way, if you've forgotten already, presented by Hickory Tavern and Coca-Cola. So,
maker of fine championship Coke cans for quite some time.
Yeah. Did you know there are 19 North Carolina Hickory Tavern locations, Adam? You can enjoy a Tar Heel game at Hickory. Look, like only a third of the normal amount of people are able to get into the game for this one. You can go to Hickory Tavern and enjoy it. And while you're there, how about a nice cold Coca-Cola? Now, Adam, what I was going to say. Adam and I have decided that we will do a couple of fun things for this game on the pod.
We're getting out the pleated khakis. Yep.
Pleated khakis time. Adam's got a flip scoreboard that we're going to use here in Pod World headquarters. So, number one, we're going to have a guest that we've had on before, but is always, of course, welcome and awesome. Phil Ford is going to be with us, talking mostly about Carmichael. Some memories of his in there, both in some practices and in games. We'll also talk to Phil about some other basketball stuff as well. Never a bad time to have all-time Carolina great Phil Ford on, so he's going to join us. And Adam, you may have seen Adam's tweet from last week. We were out looking for the 83 Carolina-Virginia basketball game from Carmichael. Well, thanks to some great pod fans, we have a DVD copy of said game. But Adam and I have adjusted our plans, actually on the suggestion of the giant pod fan, what up, Dave Culp, who lent us the 83 DVD. He said, you know, you really should watch the 82 Carolina-Virginia game. It's great as well. So we, Adam and I, are going to watch the 82 Carolina-Virginia game in Carmichael, and we'll kind of do a little bit of a Roadhouse Challenge. Won't really be a Roadhouse Challenge. It'll be more of a, hey, remember when this happened? So we don't know how it's going to go. Be a different feel here on the pod, but we're going to give it a shot.
Remember when your head was bloody? Yeah, that was awesome.
So we're going to do that on the second pod this week.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it may be terrible or it may be
awesome.
Could be
terrible.
Might be awesome. Then next week is where things get a little tricky. So what we hope to do is we will only have one pod next week, because Adam and I are both going to be on the long West Coast trip with the basketball team. Spokane and then Las Vegas for the two games. Gone all week. What we hope to do is still bring you our Christmas spectacular next week. We will have a Wofford, brought to you by Hickory Tavern and Coca-Cola, recap. Depending on when we do the show, we'll either have a Gonzaga. My guess is it'll be a Gonzaga recap UCLA preview, or maybe it's a preview of both of them. We don't know. We don't know the details yet. So get off our backs.
Look, we've had enough. All these questions about what we're doing.
And we are going to have a Christmas movie Roadhouse Challenge. You can go to Twitter right now and vote. Christmas Vacation, Elf, Love Actually, Home Alone. Those are the four movies up for vote. We will watch the movie, and it's going through the Roadhouse Challenge. Normally, Adam and I exchange gifts. We are going to change that up this year and do it in the new year. We're going to give each other 2020, starting the new year, right gifts this year, because quite honestly, we don't want to pack any more than we already have to.
Well, I've already heard that people's suitcases fly open when they're traveling with the Tar Heels, as happened on the Bahamas trip. And I don't want that to be me, and all of Jones's 9 or 10 gifts come out and are just sprawled all over the Spokane airport.
Yeah.
Sorry, Coach Williams. Let me get this goose plaque back into my suitcase, and then I'll be ready to get on the bus.
Sorry, Coach Williams. I have fallen down on the bottom of this escalator and can't seem to... Can't seem to get up.
This is the trip I'm worried about the most, because it's going to require the most clothes, which means it's going to require the most suitcases, which means I'm going to have to navigate some difficult things. I'm concerned about it.
So stay tuned. Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. So for now, we're going to let ACC Network producer Chris Duzan and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Chris Duzan, and we'll see you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.